Hello and welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich, conversations with creative people from the arts and beyond. Before the introduction of today's wonderful guest, how do you get in touch? Our website is chartproductions.com. That's where you'll find the podcast and a whole lot more about what I do during the day here in the studio. You can email me, jordan@chartproductions.com, Jordan Rich Show on Facebook, and on Twitter, it's @JordanWBZ. He is one of America's premier storytellers, a modern-era Mark Twain or Will Rogers, someone whose voice is so familiar and welcomed by millions. Today's guest is Garrison Keillor, best known as the creator of the incredibly popular Prairie Home Companion on Minnesota Public Radio and heard throughout the world. He hosted it from 1974 to 2016. He's written several books, the setting of many, of course, Lake Wobegon. And we will talk about this man's prolific writing. Check out TWA, the Writer's Almanac, on his website, GarrisonKeillor.com. The man who put powder milk biscuits on the map and brought storytelling, humor, and the magic of audio to a new level. Garrison Keillor, let's go on, Mike. Well, I've got a question for the man who is certainly the Renaissance man of our day. What are you, if somebody asks, are you a writer first? Are you a radio storyteller? How do you describe Garrison Keillor in one or two words?
Well, being a radio guy depends on other people. And so I call myself a writer. I wanted to be a writer when I was 13 years old and an English teacher at Anoka High School in Anoka, Minnesota, handed me a copy of the New Yorker magazine, of all things, and said, I thought this might interest you. And I read it, and here was A.J. Liebling, Abbott Joseph Liebling, New York Jewish, wrote about Paris, wrote about food, wrote about boxing, wrote about World War II. And I was fascinated by him. I never met anybody like A.J. Liebling. And so that's what I wanted to be. Of course, there could only be one of him, so I had to find my own way. But writing is something that you can do any place. You can do it on a bus. You can do it, sitting at your desk. And it's what I still do every day. I just finished working on editing a manuscript of a memoir. So that's what I'm in the middle of.
And if I may say, I've become a fan of, not the airline, TWA, the Writer's Almanac, which is you turning out a treasure trove of stuff. Man, you must be writing a lot. It's daily, right?
It is. But it's only, it's only 5 minutes, and I only write about 3 minutes of it, so it's no big deal.
No big deal, but that goes along with all the other stuff that's in the catalog. Before we get too far along, and I want to talk to you about the radio thing, you're working on a book now, I'm told. Being from New England, where Nantucket is not far off the coastline, is this true, a limerick book, the ultimate limerick book, Garrison?
There was an old man of Nantucket who died. He just kicked the bucket. And when he was dead, we found that instead of Nantucket, he came from Braintree.
Oh, not that I would have to bleep you, but I'm glad I didn't even have to think about it. So that's what you're working on now, soon to be published, or what?
No, I'm all done with that. I'm all done with that. I got fascinated by the limerick when I was a kid, and I went to the library, and there was an unexpurgated Gershon Legman edition of limericks. And reading dirty limericks when you are brought up fundamentalist evangelical is it just blows your mind. It's incredible. It takes a young Christian evangelical to really appreciate a dirty limerick. And I'm trying to think of one I could recite that you could use. There was a young girl of Madras who had a remarkable ass, not soft, round, and pink, as you probably think, but the kind with long ears that eats grass.
Ah, perfect.
And I loved it. I loved it. And so I've been writing them ever since. It's the perfect thing to, you know, to write to a friend on their birthday. I sit on a plane flying out to New York, and, you know, it's a little crowded, and the person on your right is leaning against you, but you can always sit and write a limerick. And over my lifetime, I have written a few darned good limericks, so I put them into a book.
It's great. And by the way, one can really learn about geography when one studies limericks, because everybody is somewhere from somewhere. There was a man or a woman or a girl from somewhere. Speaking of writing, the writing you've done over the years for the radio shows has just been so cool. And I'm a big fan, as you probably are too, of the golden age, they say in quotes, of radio, the scripted shows, and whether they were dramas or comedies. And there were some outstanding writers back then. There were some not so good ones too. But was that an influence on you when you started The Prairie Show?
Well, we listened to radio when I was a kid growing up because we were fundamentalists and we did not get a TV because, you know, it showed movies and movies are Hollywood and we were averse to that. So I listened to radio as the golden age was ending and it was still... It was still good. Fiddler McGee and Molly were still there. I forget their writer's name, Paul somebody, and he was terrific for writing kind of low key domestic comedy. The horror shows didn't appeal to me as much, although horror is much scarier on radio than.
Yes.
Is on TV, but Jack Benny stuck with radio till the very end. I think Bob Hope was still doing it. I loved all of these shows, The Great Gildersleeve, and so that's what I grew up with, you know. And when I decided to try to make a Saturday evening show on public radio. I'd just been down to Nashville. I'd seen the Grand Ole Opry, and I wanted to do something like that with musicians. But I wanted to also bring in comedy sketches, scripted sketches. And so I did over the years. I invented Guy Noir, Radio Private Eye, and, you know, A Dark Night in a City That Knows How to Keep Its Secrets. But one man is still trying to find the answers to life's questions.
I love Guy Noir. You know, as you say this, I'm thinking of Foley artists or sound effects men. You actually employed human being sound effects machines, which took it to the next level. I always loved that.
That's really, I think that was my distinction in public radio, was that I had this guy. He started out as an engineer. He was a former Marine, Tom Keith, and he was a pretty good center fielder. But he could do amazing loons. He could do talking dogs. He could do feral cats. All kinds of firearms he could do. And vocally, just everything was vocal. And so he was mixing the show, and I brought him up on stage, and this turned into something surrealistic. I simply wrote simple narrative for myself that would employ his sound effects, and so you could do a story in which the Chinese sent an ICBM over the Pacific, but mating dolphins off Oahu emitted high piercing cries, which threw off the guidance system, and so it didn't land in Los Angeles. It landed in Aspen, Colorado, in an aspen forest where Boy Scouts were around a campfire and where loons were singing Kumbaya, and Scoutmaster lit an exploding cigar and set off aspen gases, and you could just go on and on like that, and it was a sort of comedy that nobody else did. He didn't want to tour anymore, Tom Keith, and so then we brought in Fred Newman from New York, and he became our main guy. Fred, who did amazing intestinal sounds, gagging. Fred could gag in a way that made millions of people step away from their radios. I don't know what people are using headphones did, but it was unbelievable. And he could do flatulence.
See, that's something you don't see on a resume every day, Garrison. I mean,
he could make flatulence talk. I mean, it was incredible. So my job was very simple, but this is my distinction. You didn't ask me, but I'll tell you anyway.
Please.
My distinction is that I brought juvenile comedy to public radio, and I was the only one. The Car Talk guys did their best.
Right.
But Tom and Ray did not do flatulence. And I did.
No, we're talking with Garrison Keillor, of course. The voice alone is enough to let you know who it is. And that brings me to a very, very burning question that I'm sure you've gotten over the years from a few others. I was listening to you in the 70s, but before all the internet stuff and search engines, I was frustrated, as others probably were, not knowing who the hell you were. I knew you were this guy with this amazing voice, singing songs, selling biscuits, but you never mentioned your name. Others on the show would occasionally say, well, thank you, Garrison. But it took a long time for many of us out here in the sticks to find out who the hell you really are. You're very humble, I realize that, but please explain.
No, it wasn't humility. It's that I was the announcer, and also I was the host. And I just couldn't imagine myself saying, this is Garrison Keillor. It just seemed so awkward.
Hmm.
The other thing, which played a small role in it, was the fact that back about, show started 74, went national in 80, back around 60, I had sent a letter to my draft board, who had ordered me to report for induction into the Army, and I had sent them a long letter saying that I would not report for this, that, and the other reason. And I waited for the FBI to come and collect me without any idea of what I would do if they did, and they never did. They just simply never did. I was expecting them for years, and so that played a part in it.
Who's that knocking on your door right now? No.
I didn't want FBI to be listening to radio and think, oh, there he is.
That's great. I love that. You know, one of the things that always impressed me as a fellow radio person is the sense of intimacy and connection that you had. When you would take the correspondence from the audience and just with a beautiful jazz background or pianist behind you, just read the notes from people to people. That was my favorite part of every show. Can you talk a little bit about that sense of intimacy that you might have felt?
Well, touring was important to us, and doing the show in front of a live audience was part of the saves you a lot of time and trouble editing, and that was part of our choice. So I wanted the listener at home to know that it was live, and that we were doing this in front of an audience, and we were in Worthington, Minnesota, or Pierre, South Dakota, wherever we were, and I wanted to acknowledge the audience, and not to get too high toned, which was a problem in public radio back then. Public radio was trying too hard, I don't know, to be like the BBC, and I mean, they did good things, but still. So part of the idea from the very beginning was to acknowledge individuals, their birthdays, their anniversaries, and say hello to people, and also to invent sponsors so that we could, talk about bunions and bad breath and talk about laundry and cars and the ordinary things.
Yeah, but the people themselves, you were hysterical oftentimes just reading their words. It's so interesting how funny regular folk can be when they want to be. Maybe they don't even mean to be.
I don't remember it that way. I remember it, from my point of view, standing with tiny slips of paper and thinking to myself, you know, they don't teach penmanship in schools anymore.
I know. You didn't have some kid scrolling on a computer screen for you. You had to read the slips. Yeah, I guess that could be a little challenging. Speaking of the show, the guest stars and the celebrities, some of whom were, wow, just coming up and becoming superstars. I remember when you had Bobby McFerrin on for the first time. It was the first time I had heard him. I was just blown away. You did have a lot of folks who joined you over the years of some note.
There were some great people. The people I loved the most, I must say, were the singers. And there was some soulful singing that went on. That's why we did bluegrass. I'm not all that fond of the banjo, but we did bluegrass because people like Ricky Skaggs would come on. He just had a haunting voice. Hazel Dickens from West Virginia, I can't forget her name, and Jean Redpath of Scotland, Renee Fleming. There were these gorgeous people who were so modest and who were so polite and decent, and then they would sing from their heels. They really put it out there, and they gave people this powerful feeling. Hazel Dickens could make you feel that you were out there in the middle of a whole bunch of small dirt farmers, and she was telling their story. I'm not big on instrumental virtuosity. I mean, other people are. God bless them. But it's the singers, I think, who really have the Spirit of God.
And music is such a big part of Prairie Home Companion and a big part of your stage show. Everyone loves the song parodies and the song takeoffs.
I wrote parodies. I loved writing parodies because the music of my generation requires parody. My generation was a very self-important. The music of the 70s, Bob Dylan, Simon Garfunkel, these people had a high sense of mission, and they needed to be brought down. Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, I never cared for them, and so I did parodies. We parodied Sound of Silence, but making it Sounds of Sickness, and Fred Newman was involved, and he did a lot of intestinal difficulty.
Yeah, adding flatulence to any song is just, in my opinion, spices the whole thing up. I mean,
oh yeah,
doesn't get much better. Which begs the question: over the years, was there a lot or any influence on the part of the Suits from NPR? Did you have to do what we all in radio have to do at some point or another: sit in front of the program director and explain yourself, or what?
I never did. Bill Kling was my boss. He hired me back in 1969, and I operated with a free hand. He was a guy who did not trust consultants. He didn't have any vice presidents. There were no staff meetings, at least not in the early days. And then in the he was the guy who wanted the show to go national, and he fought for a system of radio uplinks for regional radio stations, and he got it from PBS, and so he was a real cheerleader. And then in the early 80s, I would say about 82 or 3, they started putting out products. They put out a powder milk biscuit poster. They put out coffee mugs. They put out joke books, also T-shirts, everything. Mm. And they got into the for profit retail
merchandising,
and we earned so much money for Minnesota Public Radio that they were not going to interfere with anything we did.
That's a great story. I mean, I remember when those products, the merch as we call it, hit the shelves, and it was flying off the shelves. In fact, somewhere I have a coffee mug in my collection that's part of the Prairie Home Companion thing. Let me just get back to the writing for a sec, because I don't want to hold you up, but the writing has been such an important part of your life, and for readers, we're very happy about that. Isn't now a great time to be a writer, because there are so many options? You don't have to just get the publisher of the week to publish your stuff. You can self-publish. You can do digital publishing. There's so many options. Are you in agreement with me that there is a good dose of opportunity for writers?
Oh, I'm sure that's true. But I'm too old to really know anything about that. I have a great assistant, Catherine, who's 27, and she knows much more than I. But I'm still a print guy, and that's really what I care about. I had in the August issue of Harper's, I had an essay, and I was so thrilled to see it on paper. Mm. I'm going to publish this limerick book myself. Actually, Catherine is, and we'll see how that goes. I still have an agent, Marley, you know, who's out there trying to interest the publisher in my memoir. So we'll see how that goes.
Garrison Keillor, I think of you as one of the funniest people on the planet, and satire and spoofing has always been one of your fortes. Is it more tricky, more difficult, more challenging now in this political climate to do that kind of humor? And are you still thinking about doing it when you get out on the road?
I've sort of given up on satire, I think, because I just don't see that it has done what satire ought to do. Satire has real power. It has power to change things, and I think that ridicule is a powerful force in politics anywhere. There are so many shabby people who've been laughed off the stage, but it's not working today, as you can tell, anytime you pick up a newspaper. And so I've kind of changed my tune. I think the late night guys on television are doing the best they can, and I don't bother with it anymore. I've switched to the other side, and now at the age of 77, I am about gratitude, and I can leave politics to people in their 20s and 30s, and they can use rougher language than I can. And I am about gratitude. I think that we live in a great country, and we have a chance to do beautiful things. And if life is this good at the age of 77, I want people to know about it so they have something to look forward to.
What a great message. What a wonderful message.
I've been spared a lot of things. I've been spared depression. I've been spared alcoholism, although I gave it a good shot, you know, back years ago. I tried, and I still love to sit down with a pen and a yellow legal pad and write sentences and paragraphs. And what more can you ask of life? Well, you can ask more, but we don't need to talk about that.
Well, that's a terrific message to close out. And I really, from the radio community around the world, you have a very special place in our hearts because you've been able to do something for so long, so beautifully, and that is connect and be hysterical, and you haven't lost anything off your fastball. So, Garrison, a real honor and a pleasure, my friend, and we'll be reading limericks and thinking of you.
Thank you.
Golly, I still get goosebumps when I think about all my radio heroes and the fact that I've been able to meet them and chat with them over the years. And no exception here, Garrison Keillor, one of my favorites. And I want to say thank you for subscribing, downloading, rating, and reviewing this podcast. Special thanks to Dan Tebow of Fast Twitch Media and to Ken Carberry and everybody at Chart Production Studios in Boston. Hey, until next time, remember, we're in the business of pure imagination, and I can't think of a better place to be. This is Jordan Rich reminding you to be well so you can do good. Take care.